Hey, everybody, welcome back to Storm Champ. This is Storm Champ, the podcast that talks to everyday people on how they get through the storms of their life and are willing to talk about their journey. We are excited to be sitting here with Scott Donaldson, who Scott is a personal trainer at the gym that I go to. He is a Spartan coach, and he's got a pretty amazing story of how he dealt with a horrific accident as a kid and how he was able to kind of work through that, bounce back, and now he is on a mission to impact the world. So, Scott, welcome to Storm Champ.
I appreciate it, Carlos.
We appreciate you having you here. So, let's start at the beginning. Tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, where you grew up and kind of what brought you here.
Yeah. So, I actually grew up kind of close to here in Amosville, Virginia, near Warrenton. Many people don't know where Amosville is, but we had about 4 acres. You know, I love being outdoors. You know, I was kind of raised on a pond as well, so I love to fish and just be outside. I guess it kind of, my journey started when I, as everyone else did when they were a kid, was on their bicycle, about 9 years old. It was actually a month after my 9th birthday. Hopped on my brand new bike after Christmas, and I used to start at the very top of my driveway, and I would go down, and it would kind of cut off to the right. And down here at this turn, I used to, like, slide out You know, pedal up fast. And this time, I actually started at the very top.
Right.
You know, I actually saw two women walking by. You know, I can't really make this up, but I told them, ladies, watch this. I'm a professional.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, right. So I start tearing down the driveway, and my eyes start tearing. I'm like, man, this is a lot faster than I kind of wanted to go. And I try to slide, and all of a sudden, boom, I hit a tree.
Wow.
Kind of lost consciousness for a second. Fell backwards, woke up to me hitting the ground. Got up, started screaming, my bike is ruined. And all of a sudden, I looked up, and there was just this white flash, and my dad had come and scooped me up.
Right.
My driveway is probably a little less than a quarter mile long. And I think he covered that, you know, in what felt like 15 seconds.
That is a long driveway, by the way. Like, if you think about how long that is. Yeah.
Very, very true, especially when you're running it, you know, with a 60, 70-pound kid on your shoulder.
Yeah.
But, you know, I will never forget that I felt fight or flight with my dad at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, I'd never been grasped that way.
Sure.
So I... you know, in all fairness, they did get me a helmet that year, but you know, my sister wore one, so that meant I couldn't wear one.
Right.
Way too cool for that.
Yeah.
My mom at the time was a paramedic, though, right? So my dad knew if he could get me inside, he could hand me off to my mom.
And,
they got me inside. My mom didn't know who was in the accident because my dad had blood all over his jacket.
Right.
Laid me down, and my dad was kind of just in shock. You know, I still remember his face being kind of just this pale white. You know, she went immediately into the polyparamedic mode, and she knew that if she was going to call the ambulance, that it would probably take a little while for them to get to me. So she loaded me up in her baby blue 94 Cadillac Fleetwood and raced me to Fauquier Hospital.
You got the Cadillac bloody, man?
Oh, yeah, man.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Wish we still had it.
Yeah.
That was probably the smoothest ride, and I would plug Cadillac there for a million times over because I still remember my head pounding.
Yeah.
You know, she turned on the music at a very, what I thought was a dull roar, and it just felt like it was just pounding in my head.
Right.
You know, so I finally got to close to the hospital. The station that my mom worked at was at the bottom of the hill, and she stopped in and told, you know, the guys that you worked with, hey, Scotty's been in an accident, can you get to the hill, which they call the hospital.
Sure.
So they rolled me in, and doctors were like, Sally, what are you doing here? And she's like, well, my son's been in an accident, you know, I think he's broken some of his teeth and his nose, he needs to go back for a CAT scan. So they got me in, and they came out, and they said, Sally, the helicopter will be here in 5 minutes. And they kind of explained to her how serious it was.
Right.
I had fractured my skull in 12 places, shattered my orbital. I ended up having to get 8 root canals, so I've just pulverized my teeth. My nose was broken.
Right.
And they were going to fly me out to Fairfax.
You know, it's interesting because just hearing that sounds horrible. And then probably for your mom, who probably understands like the real extent of that damage, you know, like, you know, what was that like for her? Did you guys ever talk about that?
Yeah, so she quit being a paramedic that day.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, she was actually one of the first females ever paid in Warrenton. It was a passion for her.
Mm-hmm.
I actually grew up wanting to do that. And it's amazing to think back that impact, because she has told me stories now about the accidents that she's ran and,
sure,
you know, the lives that obviously have been lost, unfortunately. But, yeah. You know, she said, you know, once you see your kid kind of fly off,
yeah,
that's it.
Wow.
I don't have any children yet, but my hair still kind of stands.
Yeah,
up.
Yeah. Cause I can completely relate to that. It's like, you know, yeah, I couldn't even imagine. And then like knowing again, she's got the knowledge of what the injuries really mean.
Mm-hmm.
That must've been pretty crazy for her. So they're getting ready to rush you to the hospital. You're getting ready to fly in a helicopter. Like, what was that like?
You know, so I was, I obviously was in a lot of pain.
Sure.
And it's amazing what trauma to the brain can do.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got put back on a stretcher and brought into a room, and they were trying to get me some pain meds.
Yeah.
And a couple of her buddies were in there saying, you know, Scotty, let them put an IV in you. And it was not happening. Not happening at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still vividly remember being able to push, you know, grown men away,
yeah,
with ease. You know, it's that.
The fight or flight.
Fight or flight,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And in walks Dale, right? Dale was a nurse at the hospital. And Dale comes in and is like, Scotty, what's going on, man? He's like, these guys are trying to stick me. You know, I don't like needles. And, you know, I didn't. I was terrified of needles.
Right.
And Dale came over to me, put his hand on me, and he's like, man, just calm down. They're not going to stick you. And I was like, no, they are. He's like this? And I looked down. I was like, Dale, you deceived me.
He was trying to help you,
he
man.
Was, he yeah, was. Yeah. And he'd done it without, you know, me even noticing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was immediate that I was like, oh, okay, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
This is way better.
Yeah, for sure.
Way better. So at that point, they were able to kind of stabilize me and get me, you know, out towards the helicopter. And that noise, too, I will never forget. You know, obviously, they can't turn the helicopter completely off because they have to take off again. But those blades going around, I mean, it was just thudding in my head over and over. And I ended up having internal bleeding in my head. So that pressure and that swelling was just, you know, insurmountable. Yeah, I felt like I had been, like, hit by a car or something.
Right.
So they ended up flying me out to Fairfax. My grandmother at the time lived, I believe, in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Yeah.
And she beat the helicopter to...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the power of grandmothers, man.
It was
unbelievable. Yeah, for sure.
She ended up getting to the hospital and said, you know, my grandson's been in an accident. I need to go back. And the nurses were like, unfortunately, it's got to be immediate family.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
is that serious? Yeah. Yeah. That, yeah. You're not going to stop a grandma.
You're not. And
she's like, I am immediate family.
Exactly. She's like, you know, that boy is in there alone. He's been in an accident. You know, I'm going back.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they understood it and, you know, they let her go back.
Yeah.
And from there, the first couple of days were just kind of a blur after the adrenaline kind of settled.
And I'm sure the pain started setting in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So, I spent about 10 days in the hospital, 4 days in the PICU, I guess the
pediatric.
Care,
yep,
right?
Yep. Yep.
They ended up doing about 3 to 4 hour open brain surgery. That's
kind of what
you can see from here. They did a zigzag across. So when I grow my hair out long, the hair lays flat.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Just for folks that are just listening via audio. So he kind of put his head down and he's got a zigzag across the top of his head, essentially from like almost the ear. Like it's almost ear to ear.
It's ear to ear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It is ear to ear. Yeah. So yeah, a zigzag scar across his head from where they did open brain surgery.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. They, my mom always calls him a Charlie Brown scar.
It looks like it does. Yeah, that's a great, it looks like a Charlie Brown shirt design. Yeah,
exactly.
Wow.
But yeah, they ended up kind of, and this is a little bit graphic, but they kind of, you know, cut and then peeled my face down to be able to fix everything. My temple ended up getting lodged into my brain, and that's what caused my swelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my left eye was actually swollen shut for 3 days to the point they didn't even know if I had an eye still.
Yeah.
So
did you, like, so kind of reconstructing the accident itself, did you run face first into the tree? Is that essentially what happened?
Yep. So it was about a 65-foot pine tree.
Wow.
And my driveway, as it kind of did like this 80-degree turn to the right, you know, there was a little bit of grass, probably 10, 15 feet long, and then it was just woods.
Sure.
The wood line traced all the way up my driveway. And I basically hit, you know, from literally the left side of my eye, right on my temple.
Right.
And just fell back.
I'm kind of like, I'm trying to picture like how a helmet could have helped that, right? Like, I guess the helmet could have took the brunt of the force to the top, but you still would have got probably hit on the, in the jaw or whatever. Yeah. I mean, obviously with helmets, you know, you wear them, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to picture that in my head, what that actually would have done.
They definitely, you know, said that the impact, I had to have been going somewhere between like 30 and 35 miles an hour on a bicycle.
Yeah.
I know I still had scrapes on my calves because I was, the wheels were just continuously turning, you know, scraping me up.
Yeah.
I would have definitely probably broken my jaw and really messed up, you know, my cheek, mm-hmm. if you will. But I probably could have avoided the skull fractures.
Right. Yeah. And the brain stuff.
As numerous as they were. Right.
So you're in the hospital a couple days later. Like, what was the extent of all the injuries then?
Right. So, you know, they had to wait for the swelling to go down, sure. obviously, before I could go in for surgery. I'll never forget. There's a couple pictures of me smiling and having, you know, just these jagged teeth.
Yeah. Cause they're broken. Right.
Right,
yeah.
Right. You know, they knew I was going to have surgery. They ended up putting like 3 dissolvable plates in my head. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, you know, the amount of morphine that I was allowed to have. My personal doctor came in from Warrenton and kind of set me up, and it was that honor system, you know, you only press it when you need it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But of course, you know, I was like, well, I'm in pain, and I hit it a million times, and the alarm started going off, and the doctors came in and was like, well, we're taking that away from you.
Yeah.
But it was at one point I was craving Taco Bell so bad. I don't know why. Most random thing as a kid, right? I was just like, I want Taco Bell, and like, it's going to be painful.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you think about that, like you have to chew and it goes all the way up into your head. Yeah. That's interesting.
Right.
You never ever think about it until, you know, you have a brain injury.
Yeah. There's a lot of applesauce and smoothies, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But somehow I got down 2 chalupas and a soft taco. And still to this day, that's probably one of my more favorite meals. But
that's funny.
Yeah.
Ever since then.
Yeah.
So was it just injuries to your, like, not that it just injuries to your face, but I mean, any broken bones, arms, anything like that? Or
nope. Very, very fortunate that my head took the brunt of it.
Yeah. That's a little debatable, right? Yeah.
Right. But no, I guess I had some bruising on my tailbone, you know, from the impact of just falling back. But, you know, luckily, I guess the way that, you know, I'm still alive, so that's why I do say luckily.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I only escaped from the chin up, basically.
Right.
Sustaining injuries, no broken fingers, ribs, or anything of that nature.
How long were you in the hospital?
It ended up being 10 days because my mom was able to bring me home and then kind of administer care.
Yeah.
But I was bedridden for 3 months afterwards.
So what'd you do during the 3 months?
So I ended up watching, a lot of The Price is Right. Still love that show. Absolutely love that
That's
show.
That's awesome. Was it Drew Carey doing it by then?
Carey.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I don't know if it was Bob Barker by that point. So.
Well, there, I think Bob Barker was in the original. I might've had like the switch.
The switch over. Yeah. Okay.
I know I watched all of the old Batmans.
Okay.
I ended up getting homeschooled as well.
Right.
Believe it or not, I didn't end up falling behind. I was in the third grade, and I think because of the one-on-one attention I got with my tutor, I came back and passed, you know, a couple of my SOLs advanced, and I still really learned very well in a small group setting. It took a while to kind of get acclimated again, but I was very fortunate that my mom was able to administer IVs and really watch over me, or else I probably would have spent a lot more time in the hospital.
How many surgeries did you end up having?
Just one.
Okay.
Believe it or not, it was just one. Dr. Dufresne and Dr. French. I will never ever forget those names. My plastic surgeons and surgeon.
Yeah.
You know, I get it all the time when my hair is long. You know, you don't really you would never.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm looking at you right now. You can't even tell until you put your head down. Like, right. You really can't see it, right? Yep. Yeah.
And for a long time, I, you know, my mom actually wouldn't allow me to shave my head. I didn't ever shave my head until I was 18.
Interesting. What was the reason behind that?
Being different.
Oh, right?
You know, at that age, when you're different, it's a lot easier to, you know, bullying and sure. kind of pointing out differences.
Yeah.
Not fitting in.
Yeah. Did you experience any of that?
Yeah, you know, I always say it was more just friendly banter, you know,
right.
now looking back on it, but, you know, there was definitely some, you know, I wanted to not be that outcast, but
sure.
I was put into, at that point, I think it was an IEP class,
yep.
Just to help me, right, in that smaller setting, but for me, my mom was punishing me. My mom was putting me into a class, you know, where I was slower, you know, so at that point, I felt like, I was automatically being bullied.
I understand. So how do you kind of, you know, it's tough for a kid, right, to kind of process that and then, you know, figure out ways to get past it. Like, how did you do that?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. My friendships with my friends didn't change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were still just as caring and as you know, just wondered what was going on. I think just being able to talk with my mom, and I ended up talking with a counselor for a long time. I still thought that was punishment. You know, I just wanted to be normal.
Yeah.
You know, but I look back and I appreciate the route that was taken to help me, you know, get back to being, you know, as normal as possible.
Sure.
Because they didn't know what learning disabilities I might have.
Yeah. I guess because a lot of stuff could emerge as time went on. You know, mm-hmm. maybe it didn't happen like right away, but as, you know, a couple of years passed by, brain starts to heal differently or whatever, and some stuff can kind of pop out. Did you run into anything additional?
You know, there's I don't know if dyslexia came from that or that was just kind of genetic. I struggle with math a lot, or I did struggle with math. Struggled with applying myself a lot. You know, I wanted to blame the world.
It wasn't
fair.
Yeah, you were the victim.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And as a kid, you know, it was a struggle that no one else could understand. You know, you weren't here, so you weren't going through it. You know, and it wasn't until about 9 years later, after recovering, you know, going through middle school, high school, that I actually suffered my first seizure.
Okay.
So that came about. They said there was a small percentage, you know, that I could end up developing epilepsy from the scarring in my head. And I guess it was a 9 to 10 year mark that, you know, between that time, if it's going to happen, you know,
that was
I
the time.
Having
Wow. So seizures can be scary for folks. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So, you know, my first one that I remember, and I know I was in front of my parents at that time, I was 18, laying on the couch, and I woke up and there were paramedics around me. And I was like, Mom, what's going on?
Oh, so you didn't even know what happened?
No idea.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had no idea.
Right.
And I was like, get away from me. First of all, I'm an adult.
Yeah.
You know, you can't take me. I know my rights
now. That's funny. Yeah, stubborn for sure.
Right. And
Bad Dale didn't show up. He's like, look.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Where's Dale? So the paramedics were trying to explain to me, hey, you had a seizure. My mom was trying to explain to me, and I was like, no, I didn't. I've been taking a nap.
Yeah.
Really foggy. I do remember being really foggy, but I didn't want to believe that. So the paramedic said, you know, all right, well, if you have another one, you got to come with us.
Right.
Said, fine, you know, but just, you know, you don't need to be here. The paramedic ended up actually giving my mom his cell phone number.
Oh, interesting.
They didn't even get to the end of the street, and I had another
one. Had another one. Well, okay. So two back to back.
Yeah. And, I was actually taken to the hospital over in Heathcote, off of Heathcote.
Yeah.
Which is kind of brand new at that time. Hard to believe that's been around for like 12 years now.
So again, for folks not in the area, that's in the Northern Virginia area that we're talking about, to the hospital. So.
Yep. They ended up running some tests, did an EKG, and my neurologist, who I've been seeing since I was 9 during that accident, ended up diagnosing me with epilepsy.
Absolutely. Okay.
So for traumatic brain injuries, you know, there is that risk of running or running into issues with epilepsy. And it was probably, I mean, it was 2 or 3 years before we ended up finding my dosage for my medicine.
Right, yeah.
Me getting over the fact that I needed medicine because, you know, I was Rambo and you can't tell me that I needed medicine.
Yeah.
You know, just being honest, looking back at it, you know, I was extremely stubborn with it. Again, I didn't want the accident to kind of relive itself. And,
right.
And I didn't want to be different.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So let's see. So I'm trying to paint a picture here. So you had your first seizure at 18.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple years that you're figuring out the dosage of the medicine. And for folks that aren't familiar with seizures, it's like a balance. Like the medicine is like a balance for you to find it just right. Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
So just like any other medication, you know, there were side effects.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The side effects, you know, really feeling lethargic, being really, really fatigued.
Yeah.
But yeah, my blood levels, I check every 3 to 6 months now. But they need to be between like 10 and 13.
Right.
So if it's below that, then I run a risk of, you know, having a seizure.
Right.
If it's well above that, then that could be blood toxicity.
Oh, okay.
So there are a couple different types or many different types of seizures. And the ones that I was suffering were grand mal seizures. And
those are the really big ones, bad ones, right?
Yeah. Right. So that's basically, you know, I'm losing oxygen to my brain for well over 50 seconds to a minute.
Wow. Okay.
You know, and complete, I have no control. I'm not even conscious.
Right.
So I spent, you know, that first part of my 18 year, my 18th birthday, I guess, you know, dealing with that medication, and yeah. I actually started to find fitness during that time as well.
Mm-hmm.
I was definitely the skinny mini in high school. I always wanted to play contact sports, but for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So I was a tennis and golf type of person, loved it, played it really well. But, you know, fitness actually started coming around when I graduated in high school when I was 18.
So what drove you to fitness then? Like, what was the draw there?
You know, my best friend at the time, Josh Dunn, he and his brother were always working out, and they were, you know, always bigger, more muscular guys.
Sure.
And, you know, if you want to be like them, then you got to do what they do, right?
Right. Yeah.
So he kind of got me into it, and you know, it felt good. It felt like I had control of something, you know, with my body.
Okay.
You know, when you have a seizure, you lose control.
Yeah.
If I can take control back, then mentally and physically, you feel a little bit better.
Sure. And then, so you got onto this fitness journey now to kind of take back control. You're still dealing with the seizures, though. How often were you having seizures at that point?
Yep. So, the first few years, you know, I was lying a lot about them, to be honest.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
When I had my first one, I ended up losing my license for 6 months.
Right.
And I didn't even get my license until I was 18. I waited a while. And
sure.
I ended up having another one 5 months later and lost it for another 6 months.
Sure. Yeah, every time you have them, you have to report that, and it extends out the time you can get it back.
Right. So if I go to the hospital, if I go in ambulance and the paramedics report to the DMV that I had a seizure, then most likely they're going to take my license, like, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, it was, there were a lot. I can't give a number. I mean, probably well over 10 a year.
Oh, wow.
And
now that every one of them caused you to have to go to the hospital, were they that big?
So they were that big.
Wow. Okay.
But I never told
them. Oh, interesting. So you should have went, correct, but because you weren't being honest about it necessarily, or forthcoming about
it. That's right.
Then.
Right.
Oh, okay.
I was scared to lose my independency.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And, I normally only have them when I'm asleep.
Okay.
So I wake up, your brain, you know, isn't focused on something, you know, it kind of just starts going haywire, which when you're asleep, you know, dreams are all over the place.
Sure. Yeah.
And I would wake up and I'd have like 15 to 20 seconds and I'd have this aura, right? I would just feel like I start to get really tingly.
Yeah.
You know, and I just knew it would come on. And then basically I would be awake for the first 15 to 20 seconds. If you can imagine a calf cramp in every muscle fiber in your body.
Oh, wow.
Going over and over and over.
Yeah.
You basically faint after it. You know, I can't take pain.
You can't, yeah.
And I wake up.
Wow. That's really interesting. Okay, so you're sleeping, you wake up, something wakes you up, and it's probably because you're feeling this come on.
Correct.
So your body wakes you up, and then you know, oh, shit, it's coming.
Yep.
And then it happens, you pass out because it's super painful.
Yep.
And you were hiding that?
Then I wouldn't tell anyone. Right. Right. Because, you know, I knew what I had done. I knew what had happened the first couple seizures, right?
Sure.
I did go to the hospital, but they couldn't really do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you do? Yeah.
You have
That's
them,
interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
If my levels aren't right, then you take medicine and you get your medication right. So for a long time, it was a battle of me taking my medication, me knowing I needed to take it so I wouldn't have them. And, you know, I being honest, it was well into my late 20s, you know, and I'm 30 now, yeah, that I put a lot of people in a very uncomfortable spot. You know, I told my friends, family, anyone I was around, don't ever call the ambulance.
Mm.
You know, and I didn't realize the impact that I think I had on people for that, to put them into that position.
Right, yeah.
Because I've only ever seen one person have a seizure.
Right.
Right, and it's awful.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's awful.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was, I guess I lied a lot about the seizures that I had, and I kept them quiet because I didn't think anyone could do anything extra for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, yeah, the impact on people, and then just even on your potential on yourself too, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're that's not right. getting, I mean, so part of the hospital trip is to, you know, yeah, there's not a lot they can do, but they can check you out, make sure there isn't any lingering effect, I'm assuming, right?
Right.
So, and you're kind of putting yourself at risk by kind of what I would call being prideful.
Yeah, of course, of course. That's exactly what it was.
So what switched it then? Like why, like did at some point it's like, look, I just can't, I gotta start being honest about this stuff, or is it still a struggle?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it came down to, I realized that they can do more than you know, just check me over and
sure.
send me on my way.
Sure.
I'm extremely fortunate in the fact that as long as I sleep and as long as I take my medicine, I'm fine.
Right. So you don't have them when you're awake or during
flashing
a day
lights,
or
anything yeah. like that. That doesn't
trigger
affect
them.
Me.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. I've had one in public when I was serving, and I don't know why that came on the way it did.
Yeah.
But you know, I think it just clicked that my family around me, you know, my wife, I was putting my wife in really uncomfortable
sure.
situation.
Yeah.
Making her, you know, lie to my mom.
Mm.
To my family,
yeah.
You know, they would ask, you know, has he been all right? Because, you know, down at school, you know, I check in, but of course I'm not going to tell.
Yeah, I tell him, right?
You know, so I think it just it kind of built up to the point of, you know, it's time to be honest. It's time not to lie. It's time to accept that, yeah, I'm dealing with this and I can get help.
Sure. Yeah. And I think a big part of this is you being able to help other people that are also suffering from this condition.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're being a little prideful in how much they're talking about it, or, you know, getting help about it, right?
That's right. That's right. You know, and with fitness, of course, when I have a seizure, it puts me out for days.
Mm, okay.
Days.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, I was on this rampage of health and fitness,
sure.
right? But the one big thing I was not doing, you know, I was working out twice a day. I was eating. I was training, you know, 12 hours a day with my clients.
Right.
But I wasn't sleeping well.
Oh yeah.
For about 3 months, you know, I was off and on, and I got into the best shape of my life, and then I had like six.
Yeah.
In like 36 hours.
Yeah.
And I ended up biting my cheeks so bad to the point of I couldn't eat.
Yeah.
And for me, you know,
you
if
need
I don't
to eat,
eat,
yeah, yeah.
I start to lose weight, I lose muscle, I lose
sure.
my gains, if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I realized, like, wow, if I keep having these, that halts my fitness journey.
Sure, yeah.
That halts my ability to be, you know, a leader for somebody in
sure.
their fitness.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm not taking care of myself, how can I train somebody to take care of theirs?
Yeah,
right.
And I think that's so important. And I mean, it's not just with like this. Like that is such a key thing about life. Period. Like, if you're not good with you and you're not taking care of you, you cannot be the best version for other people. There's just not possible. And like we've talked about it a lot on the show, and I've talked about it with other people. It's like, you got to get yourself straight first.
Yeah.
And like, get yourself straight, prioritize yourself, as selfish as it sometimes feels. And I promise you, the lasting effects of that will be good for everyone around you and everything that you're working on.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. So fitness. So, you know, let's talk about the fitness journey a bit. So, I watched another video that you had provided to me. You had done, you mentioned tennis and golf.
Yep.
So you did that. You trained at Special Olympics. So yeah, tell
yeah,
me about
yeah.
the
so
Special
I,
Olympics
so,
experience.
So actually I worked at, I lived over in Piedmont, and they had this event for golf, I guess, with the Special Olympics. Yep. And I was able to kind of coach people through that for a couple of weeks, which was awesome.
Yep.
I love teaching. You know, I found that I was able to teach people how to swing a golf club, how to play golf, even with tennis, even though I wasn't as good at tennis as I was at golf.
Yeah.
And I just found this passion of helping people be better at whatever they were doing.
Sure.
You know, and I think that I found myself, again, working on myself to be better at you know, fitness and sports, so on and so forth. But, you know, I was still kind of lost at that moment. You know, I didn't end up going to college until I was, I did my first couple years from like 20 to 21. And then, you know, I didn't really know if that was for me.
Right.
I ended up doing some demolition and construction for a couple years and quickly figured out that school was probably for me. And, when I ended up going to school, I said, you know what? I love working out. I love taking care of myself. I love taking care of my family. Why not pursue that?
Right.
You know, why not find a direction in that? And if nothing else, I'll get a degree, I'll meet some people, and I'll be able to take care of my family for the rest of the life.
Right.
Whether I sit behind a desk or not, you know, is completely dependent on, you know, what comes of it.
Sure.
But I ended up going down to Radford and pursuing my degree in exercise science. Really, really fell in love with that. The class sizes were a lot smaller, so I was able to learn a lot better. I love people, so I ended up getting to really know a lot of people down there. I ended up bartending and serving down there, which was another great way to kind of meet people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And from there, you know, I graduated in 2015, ended up getting certified as a personal trainer, moving to Richmond. Actually, I did not want to move back up to the area.
Welcome back.
Yeah, right, exactly. It was more the traffic.
Oh, yeah.
I had the traffic sucks around here.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to Richmond and working at the Midlothian YMCA. I did a 300-hour internship there, and my boss there ended up offering me a job as a wellness coach. And, you know, I said, man, this is something I could really get used to.
Sure.
You know, really helping people.
Yeah.
You know, just be better versions of themselves, like you said.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people spend a lot of time trying to take care of their family monetarily that they forget to take care of themselves.
Yep, absolutely, for sure. What do you think as a trainer now and working with clients, and you've been doing this for about 4 years now,
yeah.
If I did the math in my head just right, what do you think is the biggest obstacle that you think people face when it comes to their own journeys and fitness and all that?
It's a good question. It's a very good question. I think consistency is probably one of the biggest things. You know, we're coming up on January 1st, 2020 here.
The resolutions are coming. Yep.
You know, people take a moment now that we've kind of had this last week of I won't call it vacation, but, you know, we've been around family. We've been relaxed. We've had time away from work for some of us.
There's tons of food happening right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden we start to think, what am I going to accomplish?
Yeah,
I'm going to do a lot of big things in 2020.
Right.
I'm going to stay consistent. I'm going to get on this drive and I'm going to be different.
Right.
And yeah, for a month, you know, we do that.
Sometimes
2 months.
Yeah.
But then it's that consistency.
Sure.
It's sticking with it.
Yep.
We try to make it a little bit too overcomplicated.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what am I going to eat? Everyone else preps food, or what am I going to do for my workout? You know, people work out for 2 hours in the gym. Do I have to work out for 2 hours? Do I have to eat right? You know, what do I do?
You start coming up with the excuses. Yeah.
Excuses. Yeah. That's right.
You know, it's interesting. So I have a big thing about why. Like, you got to have a why. Like a why bigger than the excuses, right? And that's what's worked for me. So how, for the people that you found are successful or not successful, did they have really strong whys behind why they were doing it? And let me give you a little bit of context. I don't think, if you just say, I want to get in shape because I want to lose weight, I don't think that's a big enough why. It's like, okay, why do you want to lose the weight for? Like, what is the underlying reason for that? You know, and it could be because you've got health issues, or it could be something there, but it has to be bigger than just like, I just want to lose weight. So how do you think whys fit into the whole fitness thing?
Yeah, you know, it's one of my favorite things to do, you know, at Lifetime is one of our onboarding sessions, right?
Yeah.
I get to know somebody.
Sure, yeah.
And that why question is, you know, it's not just a one time, right? It's like five times over. I'm asking why.
Yeah,
why,
for sure.
Why? A lot of it, you know, is personal. Some of it is health related.
Yep.
You know, some of it, it just clicked, right?
Yeah.
Some people find inspiration, you know, through family or loved ones. But the people that I feel that have found the most success, you know, they do it because it's what they want.
Right.
Right. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've met, you know, I'll ask them, you know, so why Lifetime? Why are you here?
Yeah, why
are
you here?
Well, my wife maybe.
Yes, you know, yeah.
Or my girlfriend made me come in here.
You're already
or
doomed.
Vice versa,
you're
right?
Already exactly. Doomed. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
You got to want it for you.
Yep.
So I've found people that find that success are truly eager to learn, right? They want to learn how to do, just do life better. How to encompass an entire healthy way of life, to their lifestyle.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and that's where I started to evolve as a trainer rather than, you know, just coming in and, hey, what do you want to do for your workout today? To, you know, I'm going to educate you to be able to do this for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might have taken you 10 years to get to where you're at. I'm not promising anything in 2 months, 3 months,
sure.
4 months, yeah. But I'm promising you that I'm going to be able to teach you to do this for the next 5, 10, 15,
yeah.
20 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of the goal, because I don't have any experience being a personal trainer, but in my head, it's like the ultimate goal for a personal trainer should be like, you don't need me anymore. Like, we're going to get you to the point, and I'm going to give you so much value in educating you, like you said, to the point where you don't need me anymore. Yeah, if I'm still around, great, let's do it. But it's like the graduation. It's like, go forth, right? Is that kind of is that a thing?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. You know, I tell people straight up front, like, I do not want to work with you for the rest of your life. If we're working together and you know, we've built that friendship and that's what you want to do,
yeah.
Fine. But, you know, my goal as an educator, first and foremost, is to be able to teach you how to program for yourself, how to live a healthier lifestyle. You know, when you're having a down day, week, month, you know, how to overcome that. You know, I definitely help people change their attitude about their day to day. You know, there's 24 hours in a day. You got to perfect your 24.
Yep, for sure.
You know, you spend 8 to 10 at work. There's still, you know, 8 to 10 outside that you can do something impactful.
Sure.
To change your life. And, you know, I think with people, you know, that struggle with their consistency and struggle with, you know, I guess finding their way on their own. That's where personal training is great.
Yep. You know,
that's where coaching is great.
Yep.
Just getting involved with someone that has that that background and, you know, just a little bit of direction.
Yeah.
Right.
So talk to me about, so you mentioned a little bit ago, like when you have a seizure, it knocks you out for a couple of days, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, we all have those rough days where it's like, I need you to get it together, or I'm just not feeling it or whatever. Like, what helps you get back on track?
You know, it's easier for me now because I know when I'm consistent with exercise, I see results.
Sure.
Right. So I know now if I fall off the wagon, you know, for, you know, a week, 2 weeks, a month, I can get back to an elevated state. So that has helped me a lot, you know, just finding success with being healthier.
Yeah.
You know, I think that when I'm feeling absolutely down in the dumps after a seizure, I just keep reminding myself that, A, you know, I'm not the only one struggling.
Right.
There are people around me that are struggling. There are people around me that, you know, do this every day.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that have seizures every day, sometimes hundreds of seizures every day.
Yeah, clonic
seizures, you know, and I can do this. I can do this for them. I can be an inspiration to them.
Sure.
So I try to find inspiration in my downfall. Help me get back up and keep moving.
And what do you do when you see people are struggling? How do you help them?
Just talking, you know. I think talking is a big point. You know, not everyone needs to go work out. Not everyone finds, you know, happiness through that. Not everyone finds, you know, their way through fitness, and that's perfect.
Sure, yeah.
But I think communication is key.
Yeah.
Spending time together with loved ones or even just, you know, people that you've never met. You know,
yeah.
Getting to know different people, letting them, you know, explain themselves, you explaining yourself, you know, having empathy for others. You know, I think it's imperative to just be open-minded about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, empathy's, I'm huge on empathy right now. That's like my thing. Like, you know, just being able to, understand where that other person's coming from, even if you don't agree with it, even if you don't like never lived that exact thing, like you may have probably gone through something similar. It's like, right. You know, how did I feel when I just shit just sucked? Like, mm-hmm. and then understand that that person might be going through that right now.
That's sure. right.
So what's the why for you then?
The why for me, that's a great question. My why changes or has changed over the years.
Yeah.
You know, but my main why is, you know, I have another shot. I have another chance.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of chances,
yeah.
right? I didn't realize how impactful and how hard seizures are on the body.
Yeah.
You know, I would hear like John Travolta's child, you know, he passed away from a seizure. He actually had a seizure, fell back, hit his head on the tub and passed away.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
A week later I had that same thing happen.
Right.
I fell back into my tub. I didn't hit my head. Why wasn't that me?
Sure. Yeah, probably an inch or two one way or another, you could have hit your head, right? You know, yeah.
And my accident, an inch or two one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, when I have my seizure, a second longer, you know, 10 seconds longer, you know, a handful of minutes longer.
Right.
Less oxygen to the brain, you know, why am I not worse off than I am?
Right.
You know, so I have to remind myself my why is because I have an opportunity to do more. I have an opportunity to live.
Yeah. Is that a conscious thing that you think about? Like, you know, when you have a seizure, it's like, shit, I got another chance here, you know?
Now it is.
For sure, yeah.
It is. It's so important to me now.
Yeah.
And you know, if I ever end up having another one, it's been a couple years, thank gosh.
Yeah.
But if I end up ever having another one, you know, I think that, you know, I will be completely submersed with, you know, the hospital and my neurologist.
Yeah.
Chiropractors, whoever I need to talk to say, what can I do to help get back faster? And why did this happen?
Right, right, right.
Right.
So we talked a little bit earlier about being normal. Mm-hmm. Like how, and I'm of the opinion that sometimes no one's normal.
Right.
Right? So, yeah. And it's okay. Right? So how does that play into it for you now? Do you care about being normal anymore?
I really don't want to be normal. No, absolutely not. <Yeah. laughs> No, you know, everyone is unique, and that's what makes, you know, our species great, you know, being a human being great, because everyone is unique, you know, and again, everyone has their story.
Yep.
Everyone's story was the exact same, you know, is that normal?
Right.
But it's not. I don't want to label anymore.
Right.
You know, I'm big at not labeling at all. I'm me.
Right.
Right. And I'm having a normal life, I guess you could say,
for
me.
Sure.
It might look different to somebody else. Your life looks different to me, but, you know, whether it's normal,
that's okay. That's your life.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So 2020 is upon us.
Yeah.
What's the goal? Like, I don't like resolutions. I'm not a fan of resolutions. Like, you can resolve to do something today. It doesn't have to be the beginning of the year. So what's the big goal for 2020 for you?
Get that word across. That's a great word. You know, talk to the resolutioners about, you know, this is not going to be just a one-time thing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my goal ultimately, you know, I want to continue to impact people. You know, now that I am on this new decade, you know, I'm 30 at 2020.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that, you know, I've had a lot go on in my 20s. There's a lot of reflection going on. It's not so much resolutions for me, but as much as a reflection on, you know, what have I done in my 20s? What were the things that I struggled with?
Yeah.
What are the things that I overcame? How was I able to overcome those? And then being able to apply that to people's lives.
Sure.
And then just being more open with people. You know, I want to help, help people realize how they've overcome their struggles, how they've gone through their successes.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't always have to be trauma. It doesn't always have to be, you know, a struggle you've gone through. You know, be proud of who you are. And I think, you know, I'll end up impacting more people along that line than, you know, just, I guess just going about it as I would. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the big fitness stuff for 2020 for you? Are you doing any more Spartan races or anything?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely. We're actually, I'm trying to get a big team together. May 11th, I think, is the Nats National Stadium.
Mm.
My goal is definitely to run at that one and try and compete at a high level. This last year, I did really, really well with my training, and I was extremely proud of you know where I placed and everything. I would love to win one. I think that's my ultimate goal. But you know, it's my goal to run with my first team.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I got certified as a Spartan coach back a few years ago, and SGX, it's actually an SGX certification, so Spartan Group Exercise. So it's about being around people.
Sure.
So I think not only with personal goals of, you know, trying to run a race, hopefully win a race, but also get a group involved with racing now.
Nice. So as we're wrapping up here, where can people connect with you?
I think Facebook's probably going to be one of the best routes so far.
Okay.
You know, I'm working on getting my other social media pages up and going. But yeah, just Facebook at Scott Donelson, Donelson. You know, I'd love to hear your story if you have one. I'd love to hear anyone's story and triumphs, tribulations, anything along that line.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll be sure to link it in the show posting for this episode. So, last question: What's the legacy you want to leave on the world?
That's a great question. You know, I'm big into stories. You know, I think that's one thing that drew me to you and your podcast, right? And hearing Sean's story.
Yeah.
Everyone has one.
Sure.
Everyone has a story, whether it's brought on by an accident, whether it's brought on by trauma, whether it's brought on by success.
Sure.
You know, whether it's brought on by, you know, work. You know, it doesn't always have to be something negative.
No.
In fact, I love to hear things that are positive. But I think the legacy that I want to leave is, A, I want people to be comfortable sharing their story, no matter how big or small, right? I want people to empathize with one another rather than try and one-up one another.
Sure.
You know, well, I was in an accident, so, you know, my story is way harder than yours. I've overcome way more than you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's not about that.
Or even the exact opposite. It's correct. Like, my story is not big enough because you went through something way worse, therefore I'm not enough or worthy enough for it.
Why would I bring this up?
Why would I bring it up? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not true.
Yeah. Right?
I want to impact a million lives before I turn 35.
Nice.
Right. And the way that I can do that, A, this is a great start, but if I can get someone else to share their story and they impact somebody, even one person, that's one more closer to a million.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. So I want people to be comfortable sharing what they have, what they've gone through, what they've done, big or small, it is important. It's very, very important. And we want to hear it. You never know who you can impact.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think you're starting out great. I think you're an inspiration. Just a little bit that I've known you or got to know you the last couple of weeks that we've been talking for the show and just hearing your story. And I shared with you, I have a nephew who was in a car accident he was hit by a car. And similar kind of thing is, you know, his face got destroyed and he went through a lot of surgeries and everything. So I get it from that part of it, from the family member part. So definitely keep sharing your story. I can't wait to see you impact a million lives. I think you're off to a great start so far, and we appreciate you taking the time to be on the show.
I appreciate it, Carlos. Thank you very much for having me.
Everybody, make sure you go to our website at stormchamp.com. There you will find links to all of our social media and past episodes. Scott, thanks once again, and we will check you later.